Tate Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea. I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in today to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. Very pleased today, my guest is Mike Alcare. Mike is the president and CEO of Premier Incorporated. He's going to be discussing with us how technology is making healthcare more intelligent. Mike, welcome to the Tate Chronicles.
Hey, Jim, thanks for having me.
I'm in Chapel Hill. Premier is just up the road from me in Charlotte, North Carolina. So kind of neighbors between us. But Mike, why don't we start by telling our listeners a little bit about your personal background?
Thanks, Jim. So as you said, I am the president and CEO of Premier, and I've been in that role since May. I've spent the last 18 years at Premier, and we'll get into some of the detail in terms of what Premier does in just a minute. Before that, I grew up in the Big Six in Deloitte and Touche and Capgemini, Ernst & Young. Then I went to, even before that, I went to, got my MBA at Indiana University. I studied computer science at Indiana State. I actually was a competitive swimmer. And I come from a family that's three siblings, two older brothers and a younger sister, and always very, very active and, you know, very close to the family and the extended family. But anyway, grew up in the Midwest. I'm happy again to be part of what Premier is doing in healthcare.
I appreciate that personal background. Tell us a little bit about your professional background and how you ended up at Premier.
Sure. So Premier itself has always had an incredible mission, and the mission and the focus of the business really has been working with healthcare systems to transform healthcare. The way we describe it is from the inside out. So not coming down from necessarily, you know, from, you know, government policy and those kinds of things, but working with the government, working with health plans, working with our healthcare systems, and truly improving the way healthcare is provided in the U.S. And Premier is this aggregator, if you will. We work with about 4,400 U.S. hospitals and health systems and more than 235,000 other providers. We're working with them on helping them reduce their supply chain cost, helping them improve their quality, helping them with the as they think about new ways to deliver healthcare and accept new models for payment. So we build out collaboratives using our data and technology to help healthcare systems think about new ways to deliver healthcare and models that, you know, where they are responsible for, you know, the total cost of care that's being provided. So a lot of different ways that we help healthcare, but it's primarily through our collaboration, it's through our technology, and it's through our data.
You know, you mentioned that's a giant number of U.S. hospitals Premier is involved with, 4,400. And so I would imagine that lessons learned and best practices, Premier would be pretty aware of that and be able to bring that knowledge from one healthcare system to another. And I know that's part of your mission, but I guess if you fully embrace that, that's also your responsibility. You are actually part of the healthcare systems.
It is such a great point. And it you know, the challenge in trying to understand best practices is really all about measurement and trying to get everybody to standardize data sets so that you can truly measure performance. And then, Jim, as you said, as you're measuring performance and you're benchmarking that against, you know, one another, you can identify where sort of the sweet spots for some of these organizations are in terms of performance. And once you identify those, then, you know, we have a whole collaborative capability where we're sharing that best practice with other healthcare systems, other healthcare deliverers, in terms of, you know, what's the best way to provide care, you know, from a quality standpoint, from a safety standpoint, from a cost standpoint. So our collaborative capability is very, very unique. And to your point, we do take it as a significant responsibility of ours to help spread that, you know, some of those insights and best practices, but also make sure we get that back to the federal government and help them understand how to, you know, how it could affect policy in terms of how, you know, some of these healthcare systems are improving the way they're providing care.
Mike, you kind of mentioned getting some of that best practices, lessons learned, those kind of things back to the federal government. I was actually on the Premier website yesterday. Let me just mention that. That's premierinc.com. And posted there was some of the Office of the National Coordinator, ONC. Premier has made some commentary and recommendations that have to do with electronic health records and security and things like that. So it was dated yesterday. So pretty currently, seems like Premier is involved with moving things back up towards the top where policy is actually made. And they need that input. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, it's so true. So what you're referring to is, you know, a lot of the work that we do on interoperability. You know, I'm not sure the federal government ever had in mind when they rolled out meaningful use to have, you know, three or four major ecosystems that didn't necessarily connect with one another as they were thinking about automating an electronic medical record. And so one of the things we've been really keen on pushing is interoperability and making sure that we can transact with that data. That's just one thing. But man, we've been helping the HHS as they think about, you know, improving quality from a maternal health standpoint. We're working with a few hundred hospitals to do that and standardize their data sets. During COVID, we stood up a coalition of suppliers, of distributors, folks from FEMA, from HHS, from the CDC, from the FDA, and different organizations. But we stood up a coalition to really help the government understand in the early days of the virus, you know, what exactly was facing us from a supply chain standpoint and from a technology standpoint, where we were short on technology. And so anyway, we engaged this coalition and pretty much every day stood that up and had that group understand where we were with the impacts of the virus. We actually created some AI-enabled technologies for syndromic surveillance. So we had some technologies that were underpinned by other work that we were doing. And very quickly, if you remember early days of the COVID, that we didn't have the testing. And so what we did with our technology was we looked at some of the, using machine learning classifiers, looking at some of the unstructured data within the physician notes, and we could identify through symptoms as to whether or not patients had high probability of having COVID. And so we were able to determine whether there was a surge of the virus in, you know, a specific zip code or from a, you know, depending on, you know, where the zip code was, whether it was a meat factory or a prison or those kinds of things that were being impacted. But that's one of the technologies that very quickly we stood up and created. The other technology we stood up and created using AI was we learned a lot from what happened in New York on utilization patterns for PPE, as yes, well as drugs that were required for people to be on ventilation. And so we use both public data, some of the stuff coming out of Hopkins and our data to understand the progression of the disease. And then we layered on some AI algorithms that said, this is the amount of PPE that's gonna be required if in fact the disease spreads this way. And to these communities, this is the amount of PPE and other drugs that you're gonna need. So those are just a couple of the examples of how we're, you know, informing government and government policy, you know, both in a COVID world and post-COVID.
You know, and Mike, I'm glad you brought up the effects of COVID. Nobody who's in healthcare, certainly in the United States, has ever experienced anything like this. You know, I mean, historically, maybe the most recent thing was polio in the 1950s, but of course that was not nearly as rapidly spreading across the country. And the biggest thing I remember in my healthcare career, and it is a tiny impact compared to COVID, was just the reimbursement changes in the 1970s, the federal government going to DRGs, those diagnostic related groupings. And then we got the value-based care. We thought that was a big stuff. But then here comes this emergency declaration because of a pandemic. And a lot of the software that that hospitals were using for bed census and where to put patients and vacancy rates and all those kind of things just had to go by the wayside. And we're still involved with it. You know, we're just a few months away from 2 years into this, and we don't know where the end of it really is. And so it's, you know, a constantly reinventing things, you know. And of course, 4 or 5 months ago, we thought it was about over. And then here it comes again with Delta. So I imagine you've been having lots of conversations with your hospitals and health systems out there, trying to see what things are going to be able to predict just for next month, much less 2 or 3 years down the road.
Well, yeah, two things. So we announced two pretty substantial efforts in the last couple of weeks. One was on the supply chain side, where we made an investment in a company called Accella. And Accella actually produces generic drugs. And so us, along with 11 or 12 of our hospitals, made this investment to deploy capital there because we think it's a high quality producer of generic drugs. Plus, we think that we need to have more resiliency and more domestic production of these products. So it's something that's, you know, very, very critical to us and our health systems to make sure we have that level of resiliency. But then we also launched an initiative called Pink AI. And Pink AI is basically everything you were just talking about from a technology enablement standpoint. We believe that, you know, with our data and technology, that we can accelerate the ingenuity in healthcare, you know, through sort of this groundbreaking combination of tools and technologies to provide better and faster and smarter care for patients, to include, obviously, COVID patients. Our data and analytics and clinical intelligence capabilities, you know, are very, very differentiated in that they, you know, not only deliver the insights, but we can very, very quickly take those insights and write those and get those into the workflow of how healthcare delivers or providing care. And then there is additional use cases that we're using this for in life sciences. So think about patient identification, patient activation for a drug trial. We're using it to help our employers and healthcare providers come more closely together through our Contigo Health initiative, again, to standardize the way that care is being provided to, you know, a low cost, high quality sort of outcome. We're also using it in the payer market to help, you know, create areas focused on real time prior authorization. And, you know, that's a huge issue. If you're, you know, have a disease and you're going through the progression of managing that disease to get the next course of management, oftentimes there's days or weeks that go by before you're authorized for the next series of procedures. And so we think using AI, machine learning, natural language processing, natural language technology is a perfect framework to really drive down the time frame it requires to do prior auth. In fact, do it real time at the point of care, looking again at the unstructured data, looking at lab values, looking at screens, those kinds of things, and have that done at the point of care. So yeah, to your point, your earlier point about technology and the evolution of technology, I think we're on the forefront of some amazing things leveraging AI.
I want to talk, get into the weeds here some, Mike, about AI, artificial intelligence. Some folks call it machine learning. But you mentioned your new offering, Pink AI. For folks who want to know more about that, the website is pinc.ai.com. And there's certainly a lot of information there about your new offering. One of the things about AI is it's certainly not restricted to healthcare. It's involved with a lot of different industries. Can you kind of give us a generic tutoring for about a minute on what is AI? What is machine learning? What's this all about?
Sure. And first, Jim, it's the website is www.pinc-ai.com. It's a hyphen there between the PINC and hyphen.
Okay. Great.
So
thank you.
For us, and I'll try to make this as high level as possible. But so the way we're harnessing AI, which is really a technology that uses machines or uses bots to actually process information quicker. And so what we're using it for is there's a lot of information in an electronic medical record that is in the patient and in the physician notes. So they check boxes, they put lab values and all that, but there's a rich amount of information that's in the patient notes. And so when we talk about natural language processing, natural language technology using AI, what we're talking about is truly looking at those notes and deciphering what those notes mean in a machine capable reading fashion. And so, you know, you have different words that occur. Well, a word can mean something different depending on the context of the word before it and the word after it. And so we use these technologies, these bots, if you will, to bring that context to the fore so that we can automate or technologically enable that language into something that's machine readable. And then what we do is we create machine learning classifiers that through a lot of our history, we understand what different words mean, and we attach classifiers to them to bring meaning to them. And then obviously that allows us then to put those into a technology framework so that we can, you know, use, for lack of a better word, automation to bring some sense to that. And the reason all of that's really, really important is, again, as I started, there's a lot of rich information in these notes that we're not taking advantage of. And so we're trying to bring meaning to those patient notes. So that's the primary focus of our AI machine learning capability. And the use cases are endless. Mm-hmm. So I talked a little bit about how we're trying to, we talked a little bit about syndromic surveillance. I've talked about how we want to standardize care, talked a little bit about prior authorization. There's even stuff, you know, as hospitals charge for their services from a coding standpoint to ensure that they're doing accurate charging. We can look at what's happening in the unstructured notes and the physician records to, you know, even look at, you know, how the HCC should be coded. There's a lot of incredible use cases. I talked a little bit about what we're doing in life sciences for identifying patients for trials, which is it's a huge opportunity. Sure. But anyway, to make a long story short, there's an unlimited amount of use cases we can use for that technology.
Let's just talk a little bit about, well, there's two things actually related to the pure clinical care side of things, Mike. You're talking about being able, we got tons and gazillion tons of precise healthcare data that's standardized and codified out there, but there's a lot of unstructured information and data that's down in just the character-based notes.
Exactly.
And you're talking about maybe accessing in a more structured way pertinent information that's in those unstructured notes.
That's correct.
Okay. And the other thing, Mike, just to kind of give an example about how AI might be used clinically in the early days of the COVID pandemic, if you get all this data and there could be some type of essentially a software that's running that's looking for patterns, and probably pretty quickly it would pull up stuff like fever,
exactly,
cough, O2 saturation, things like that.
Loss of scent, loss of smell, loss
yes.
of taste.
Exactly. Forgot about those. Yeah. And so that's all before somebody's actually been tested and you know, exactly, and it's positive. So if you got those positives and then you almost can run back through all their data and see what the patterns are, and that lets you, you know, do some clinical support, knowing if people come in with this, there should be EHR should have a red star jumping up or something like that. That's the learning.
That is exactly, and your whole example on patterns is exactly correct. And And that is the premise for, you know, the AI and the machine learning is recognizing those patterns.
And not only patterns for diagnosis, but I'm sure patterns for treatment. I remember it took a few months before they realized that people who were really sick, they should be turned over and be on their belly as much as possible.
Yep.
And I'm sure that was found out in a couple of health systems and then it got publicized. But AI could pull that out quicker, probably. And those kind of positive treatments could have come to the surface much quicker.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing I wanted to talk about was your thoughts on how the healthcare system in the U.S., the supply chain was affected by COVID. Was it just or pharmaceutical supply chains or all supply chains, bed sheets? What was the effect?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Jim. So first of all, what I think we found out through COVID was that we did not have a resilient supply chain, and for a variety of reasons, but we were way over too dependent on China and way over dependent on Southeast Asia. When I say we, I'm talking about the healthcare system in general. And so with COVID, if you think about, you know, where the shortages were, it was face masks, isolation gowns, exam gloves, but things that actually protected the caregivers. And that was really, really critical, a critical issue. And then the second was, if you think about drugs that if patients that are, you know, on respirators and needing to be sedated, we ran into shortage issues there. So those were the areas where the big focus was. And so very, very quickly through that coalition that we stood up, we worked with, you know, suppliers and distributors and others, and including us. We stood up additional manufacturing capability as quickly as we possibly could. Obviously, things were being stood up here very quickly, but we produced as much product as we possibly could. But one of the things we took out of that, and by the way, this is something we've been focused on for years, was reducing our dependency on, you know, both China's and other Southeast Asian countries, because it was, we, you know, if you looked at, you know, the APIs of a pharmaceutical, which is the active pharmaceutical ingredient, which is the one of the major raw materials, maybe only 20% of that is manufactured in China. But when you peel that back and you look at the raw materials that go into producing that, maybe as much as 80% comes from China. And it's just too much dependence on one country. And very similarly, you know, in PPE, you know, they had that, you know, it's such a dominant position in the market that if you look in 2020, I think these numbers are accurate, but I think the Chinese economy grew like 5%, 4.6%. The U.S. economy grew or shrank. The U.S. economy shrank, you know, like 5.4% or close to 5%. So there was a 10% gap. And I would have argued that a lot of that had to do with, you know, pricing elevation. Obviously there, you know, we were buying more product, but certainly I will also tell you that, you know, prices were going up, all those kinds of things in the midst of this pandemic. And it was really, we were really, really in a tough spot. So our healthcare systems executives, along with us, have said never again. And so we've got a big focus on domestically manufacturing critical products. So we actually, along with 34, 35 of our health systems, we set up one of the world's most automated isolation gowns manufacturing capability in the world. And the reason, and by the way, we designed that isolation gown in concert with our healthcare systems clinicians. We did it in a way that it can be very highly automated, which means long-term, it could be cost competitive against low labor cost countries. Along with 16 of our healthcare systems, we invested in a domestic manufacturer of masks and help them expand production and get additional needed capital and those kinds of things. So that was really critical. We invested in gloves. And as I said earlier, we just made an investment in generic drugs. I firmly believe we've had way too much dependence on some of these critical products that in most cases, a lot of cases are very automated. And there should be no reason why we are not producing a lot of that stuff here. Now, I get it. There are products that do require a lot of labor, and we're going to have to figure out ways to arbitrage that labor cost. But when it comes to protecting our caregivers, I would argue that cost should not be the number one area of focus. I would argue that getting access to product is the number one issue that we need to deal with. And I think to do that, we've got to have more resiliency, and we've got to have more domestic production of those critical products to protect our caregivers.
Well, Mike, we're almost totally out of time, but before we let our audience go today, if they want to know more information about Premier or Premier's new offering, Ping AI, where could they connect or find out more information?
Thank you, Jim. So it's www.pink-ai.com.
And the main Premier website, of course, is at premierinc.com, premierinc.com.
That's it.
To our audience, thanks for joining me on this episode of the Tate Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest today, Mike All Care Premier. Mike, thanks for coming aboard today.
Jim, thank you for having me.
You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.